If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the magnificent Monday edition of the Yard. Been a busy day. Mondays typically are very busy. It's difficult for me to get the show done early on Monday. It is a lot going on, kind of coming off the weekend. You know, you chase some rabbit trails over the weekend trying to get some interviews, and sometimes it's Monday before they get back with you. That's okay. Hey, I trust you guys all had a happy 4th of July weekend. Worked out really good calendar-wise for some of you as you you had a three-day weekend. How cool is that? Well, we didn't. We worked all weekend. We did take a little time for our families, and, you know, I'm an empty nester, so there's not as much going on around me. And, of course, opening or owning a couple of businesses sometimes, you know, you don't have a lot of downtime. But not complaining, don't get me wrong. But I hope that you guys did. I bet it was tough getting up going to work today. Yeah, I got some friends of mine that I know their Mondays are always busy. And then all of a sudden you have the Friday holiday, and so everything kind of gets backed up. And listen, let's be honest about this. If you were going to have a three-day weekend, you kind of start having that weekend maybe half day on Thursday, right? Nothing gets done after lunch on Thursday ahead of a three-day weekend. This doesn't happen, man. You know as well as I do, it doesn't happen. So stuff gets piled up. So I suspect many of you had a very busy Monday. You made it. Congratulations. You survived. You always do. And maybe some days you thrive. But yeah, Mondays are tough. Busy for me too. But I don't have the same work schedule that you guys do. But the reality of it is we have a chance to celebrate our independence. And listen, I love being an American. I do. It's the greatest country in the world, right? I mean, just from an entertainment standpoint, right? I mean, you just think about how much fun we have here in the States. But yeah, there are a lot of things about, you know, about the country that need to change, right? Now, I'm largely apolitical, but I have some political values that are very important to me. And there are sometimes I kind of feel like a political nomad, right? That's just honesty. But here's the reality of it. I believe in accountability with everybody, right? I firmly believe in accountability. I don't care who's in the White House, who's in the governor's mansion, or who's in the mayor's house or mayor's position within our town. I believe that all people should be held accountable and have equal protection under the law, but also equal prosecution under the law. Those are things that are important to me. I firmly believe that. And I think most of us can agree on that. We may not agree on much else, but we agree on that. People that break the law should be held accountable, right? Now, that's not to say there's not some leniency at times to get deals done or perhaps get a bigger criminal or things. There's all that happens. And there are people, young people, that do something stupid and they say, well, they're a first-time offender. Let's give them a little bit of a break. I'm okay with all that. I didn't get any breaks as a first-time offender. Well, maybe that's not fair. But listen, you know, it's just like, you know, there's so much that happens, right? And people make these grand promises. And I don't care who you are. Like, I'm a firm believer in this. Who's to say that we won't survive the truth? I believe we will. And I believe we'll all be better having known the truth. And so no matter how inconvenient it is, I think the truth should be known. I think if somebody goes out and does something that harms other people, there has to be a measure of accountability. If not, what's the point in having laws? Right? If you can go out and mistreat other people or abuse other people and then never be held to account, then we have to revisit how we execute the justice system. Right? And there's so much stuff that gets out there. Like, one of my favorite movies of all time is back on Netflix, and I encourage you to watch it if you haven't. It's V for Vendetta. Love the movie. Love it. Haven't figured out which way to commemorate it as a tattoo at some point, but I will. Love the movie. It's back on Netflix. So if you're looking for something cool to watch, watch it. It's incredible. It's kind of a futuristic, dystopian type deal. There's a lot of like anti-government sentiment in that. And there's all this talk about a virus, right? There was a virus that was unleashed, and all of a sudden the federal government tried to make people feel dependent upon them. And of course, this takes place in England because America's in shambles during this movie. And so there are some things that happen over the course of this movie, because ultimately it's about revenge. A lot of the best movies are. I plan to watch it every day that I can between now and the time it leaves Netflix again, because I love it. I love it and I own it. But it's one of those things where there's so many great scenes and lessons learned in this movie that I think every American, really every citizen in the free world, should probably watch, about the propaganda that we're kind of fed and how they manipulate the truth to benefit themselves. And there's so much of that that happens. And we're being absolutely overrun with that in America, and have been really in the last 10 years. And again, it hasn't really mattered who was in office, but there's so much that happens that is very self-serving. And not to me or you. Yeah, we get nothing from it. You know, that's the thing. I don't care, like all these lists and things like that. There's all these list of all these people that have had wrongdoing. There are all these people that were maybe involved with the Kennedy assassination, things like that. I think all of that should be public. And some people say, well, you know, it's better for the Republic that we don't make everything public. Nonsense. Nonsense. Make all that stuff public. Make it public. And if some important people along the way are implicated, then so be it. Nobody is above the law, period. I don't care in any respect how that looks or how that feels for people. If people knowingly break the law, they got to be held accountable. They do. And I don't care how high profile they are. I don't care if we release all this information and it just shakes the foundation of our very being. I'd rather know the truth than have these people continue to lie to us and protect people that are villains walking among us. To me, none of that makes any sense. But nevertheless, I get a little frustrated. So that's as political as we're going to be for a while. True. On Wednesday, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the fallout of the House settlement and some things that we're learning. I've still got a few phone calls out that haven't been returned yet, some emails to kind of get some information to kind of put some of that in layman's terms. Right, there's this whole thing about designated student athletes, what that all means, and you know. So we'll get to the bottom of it. We will. Speaking of getting to the bottom of it, go to Bulldog Burger Company and make a happy plate. Yeah, whether that be the BLT salad, and if you can get to the bottom of that bowl, congratulations, because the proportion is so substantial. It truly is. I don't know that I've been to Bulldog Burger Company where I have ever just went in there and just knocked it all out. It's so filling. It really is. And like for the bride, when we go, it's like lunch and dinner for her. Like you get it tonight, it's dinner. She'll have the rest of it for lunch tomorrow. So incredibly important to go get good food. I don't just eat for nourishment. I eat for enjoyment. I know many of you are the same way. I think that's a pretty important aspect of it too, right? Eat to enjoy, not just to sustain life. Bulldog Burger Company thrives in that respect. They absolutely get after it. They want you to have a dining experience, not just go eat. So go put your feet under their table. Let them take care of everything else. Get the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Order your entree. Chances are it's going to be a hamburger. It's going to be one of the best in the country. Great selection. If you're a newbie to Bulldog Burger Company, start with the Bulldog. Just wanted to kind of throw that out there. Probably the way to go, because it's going to be what you're used to from a palate standpoint, but going to be at a different level of enjoyment. It is. And then get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. But maybe you're not feeling a burger today. Maybe get the Sloppy Joe sliders, the Sweet Heat chicken sandwich. Man, you can't beat it. I've had everything on a menu. I've never come away from there disappointed. I can't say that about most places. So if you're in town or on the way to town, stop at one of their three great locations. University Drive here in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. All right, for those of you night owls, or perhaps those of you with a DVR, which should be just about everybody by now, Ace Reese and Ryan McPherson, as you guys know, earned a spot on the Team USA Collegiate National Team. And, hey, now they're going to get a chance to do some cool things. They've already arrived in Japan. For those of you that follow them on social media, perhaps you've seen it on their stories or their pictures. But super cool, man, to have a couple Bulldogs representing Team USA on this collegiate team. They'll be headed to Japan. Now, they will get to work over there and kind of get acclimated to the time change. And how super cool is it, man, to be in Japan? I mean, it really is. So they're going to have, a couple practices, and then they play Japan Tuesday and Wednesday. So that's tomorrow morning and the next day. So, again, you can probably DVR that. Or if you're so inclined, stay up. You do what you want to do. But they're going to take on the collegiate team from Japan, and we'll have a couple more days off and then kind of get it back together for a couple games on Friday. Looks like it'll be a doubleheader, 2 a.m. and 9 p.m. And then on July 13th, they'll play the finale and then come home. So they'll spend a week or so in Japan representing all of us. International competition is always a super cool thing. But, yeah, I just want to make you aware of that. Again, that's I'm telling you now to go ahead and find your DVR. I don't know where it's going to be broadcast. I don't. And maybe it's a streaming thing you can watch on demand. I don't know. But nevertheless, be prepared for that. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how that all that thing kind of plays out, you know? All right, other news today around the Southeastern Conference. Joe Castigliano is announcing his pending retirement at the University of Oklahoma. That has raised some eyebrows, shall we say. Been the AD at Oklahoma since 98. Of course, Zach Selman. Norman is home, right? And he spent some time working on the staff there. And so he is an obvious candidate. And for anybody to suggest that he wouldn't be someone they would at least talk to is just kind of kidding themselves. Now, a lot of people have spread some rumors, some true and untrue, that Zach Selman has talked with other people about other openings. I don't begrudge that of anybody, right, looking to better their own situation. Of course, Selman signed an extension earlier this year. We had that story over at jeanspage.com as it happened, once it was ready for public release. But, yeah, I mean, to sit here and just kind of kick the can around and act like this is not something of concern for Mississippi State would be short-sighted, I think. Now, there's a long time to go. It's going to be a long process, you know. Going to be part of it, you know. These things take time to work out. But it's pretty interesting. So, according to Pete Thamel, I think Pete had the actual break of ESPN. Pete's a pro, been around a long time. He will retire from his full-time role during the upcoming school year, bringing an end to the longest tenured run for a current AD in major college sports. Upon the hiring of his successor, he will stay on as athletic director emeritus. Now, a couple factors to consider there. Is he staying on as the emeritus? Is he going to be like a Jeremy Foley? Right? And so, like, if you're a new guy coming in, let's say Mike Alford from Florida State, Bulldog alum, was a candidate for the job when we hired Selman, also has some connections there, you begin to ask yourself, okay, is Alford comfortable taking a role where the previous AD is there kind of looking over your shoulder? And again, I don't know how that's all going to be constructed, right? Who knows? But some of these giants in the world of college athletics, even though they are not really involved with day-to-day operations, when it comes to a lot of major decisions, they still have the opportunity to weigh in. And so that presents an interesting dynamic to this Oklahoma job for me. Chances are that it would probably take somebody that has a pre-existing relationship of some sort with Joe. And it may not be directly as a subordinate, but it may be somebody that just understands how Joe operates. That's not to say that the university president is going to limit the number of candidates to people that have a relationship with Joe. But that is something to consider. And so everybody says, well, Steve, what does this mean for us? Well, at this point, it doesn't mean anything for us. But it is something that is now on the horizon that you have to think about. As you guys know, you know, it's been almost 3 years now. I guess in 22, it's when Coach Leach died. We hired Zach Selman shortly thereafter. And I really think Zach has kind of found his stride now. You know, the first year you kind of observe, then you begin to kind of implement, kind of get things the way you want it. As you guys have noticed, I mean, you know, he's had a couple of major coaching searches during his tenure. The first one, of course, Jeff Levy. Second one, Brian O'Connor. Jury out on the first. Rave reviews for the second. He's done a good job kind of keeping Chris Jans here, keeping Jans happy. Recently, as we discussed on Friday's show, negotiated a contract extension for Sam Purcell. And so all of those things I think are important. As I mentioned on Friday's show, I think we're kind of getting ready for a sense of normalcy where things kind of slow down. Then all of a sudden, you know, 72 hours later, we find out that there are some news media outlets that are already linking our athletic director to the pending opening in Norman. And so again, Zach Selman, clearly an obvious candidate for this job. How serious a candidate, we don't.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
No. And then you begin to think about, in the event that he leaves, you know, who do we go get? Do we start fresh with a brand new search? Do we revisit the list of finalists from 3 years ago? Maybe. You know, is John David Wicker a candidate again? Is Jared Banco a candidate again? Mike Alford? You know, who knows? And so at this point, there's nothing to kind of worry or concern yourself about because nothing's happened. Now, I know that I'm also speaking just to kind of hear myself talk because worrying is in the Bulldog DNA. There's some of us that are always worried about somebody leaving. The thing that I would say is that that's just not always the case. You know, makes me wonder what happens when your wife is 15 minutes late getting home from the grocery store. You know, we get a little needy at times. We do. But the thing that I have learned in all these years, near 30 years of covering Mississippi State, is we always find a way to be okay. The one thing that I'll also argue for is stability. You know, we need to find a way to have a consistent vision, because if we're just going to change athletic directors every few years and then we got to have a new master plan and go spend a bunch of money on that and, you know, change the direction here, you know, we got to go hire all new people, all new deputy and associate ADs and get all, you know, that at some point we have to kind of get off that train. You know, and you go back, I mean, if you really look at this thing, you know, Scott Strickland leaves us for Florida. And many people to this day have not forgiven Scott for that. Now you look on the other side of things. I mean, you know, Scott and him have done some pretty big things. So he's been there. And I don't think that helps the angst of some, because you say, hey, he could have done that here. And maybe he could have. Maybe. I think Scott did a really good job with our branding. Really kind of took our marketing efforts to a new level. And to be honest with you, I think we have maybe disabled some of those resources. And it's a different day and time in college athletics. I mean, you can't have, you know, a full marketing department like perhaps you did before, because you got this $20.5 million line item on your budget now that you didn't have before. And that means there are a lot of people out there, mainly in communications, that has to also implement our marketing strategies. And so our people that work in media relations, also known as communications, have more on their plate now than any other time. And if anybody thinks that all of a sudden we're going to have a new influx budget-wise that will allow us to employ other people, you're kind of kidding yourself a little bit. Basically, what happens is when somebody leaves in a support role, we just don't backfill the position. We just say, hey, I'll tell you what we'll do. And I used to do this too. When I was in retail, I'd say, hey, so-and-so left, and here's what we can do. We can hire somebody else, or I can give you both a raise, and we won't hire anybody else, but you'll have to do more. And people are always going to say, yes, I'll do it. Just give me more money. I'll take on more responsibility. And you love employees like that. But in this climate in which we're operating with in athletics, there's more to do and less time to do it in. It never ends. I mean, just think about how many of these, for those of you on social media, and you see it all the time, how many of these graphics do you see that our recruits retweet or share that were DM'd to them that are specific to them? It's not just, hey, come to Mississippi State. It's, hey, John Q quarterback, high school, date, time, weight, favorite color. There's all that stuff on there. So somebody has to generate those graphics. Then somebody has to communicate that and send them to all the players in hopes that they will share them. And how many times do you see it? Hey, Mississippi State showing love, right? Those positions didn't exist 5 years ago. And, of course, it's kind of an entry-level position, but there's somebody that has to manage all of that stuff. And so I share that just because it is a very challenging time. And there's a lot of people that are in place now that in the event that we had a change, they're forced to make a change, right, that may not be there before. Because as we saw when John Cohen left, many of you were happy about that. I think most people were disappointed, especially to leave within the league. John did a good job here. I know some other people disagree, but you know, you look at the fact that, you know, he hired Chris Jans, he hired Sam Purcell, hired Chris Simonis, he won an AFL championship. Hey, we didn't sustain it, but we still have it. Right, something never been done before. Brought Mike Leach here. You know, I think the initial hiring record might not have been great, but John certainly got better as it went along. But when John left, he took a lot of people with him to Auburn. Some of those people in very strategic type positions. Red Hobart, one of those. You know, a guy that's very beloved within the fan base. And he leaves and goes to Auburn. And so you begin to consider that aspect of it too. You know, these are people that maybe were not associate ADs here, but they leave for, I won't even call them lateral positions, they leave for basically promotions to other schools. And so that's why I think, you know, the best thing for us is that we survive this thing here and kind of keep Zach Selman in place. Not that Oklahoma couldn't come up with the money and we couldn't make good use of the money, but I just think we got to get off this whole roller coaster ride with all this. We got to have some stability. We have to have stability. Yeah, you know, because we just renovated the Bryan Building, right? At least that floor of the Bryan Building, renovated all those offices. What if we bring in the new guy and he didn't like it? Or the new lady, and she didn't like it. Well, I want to change this, and I want more of this and more of that. You know, at some point, we got to stop spending money on that stuff. We don't have the money to continue to renovate all the time when it comes to offices. Not to say that we weren't in need of an update. We were. But at some point, we got to get somebody that has a consistent vision that is consistently present and consistently pushing in one direction. Because in the event that Zach Selman takes a job at Oklahoma, we're going to have to bring somebody else in. It's going to have need 6 months to take an inventory of where we are, where we're headed, and then if they agree with that plan. So you kind of get where I'm going with this. And again, I know Zach Selman's got his critics out there. Every athletic director in the country does. Maybe you don't think that we invest enough in your favorite sport. Maybe you think we overemphasize a sport that you don't like. You know, to each their own. Everybody's got a spoon in the pot. And some like to keep it stirring no matter what the situation is. But the reality of this is yeah, this would be something else we'd have to deal with. And I don't think that's best for Mississippi State. I'm not saying we got to go out and renegotiate a contract. I'm not suggesting that we need to go out there and throw more money at this. I think we need to do what we need to do and kind of figure this thing out. Because, again, I just think it's one of those things. If you're Jeff Lebby, you got an athletic director that believes in you, believes in your vision, is committed to you, is willing to support you and sustain you until your vision becomes a reality. And so in the event that Zach Selman would leave, I mean, certainly Jeff Lebby wouldn't be a candidate to be the head coaching job at Oklahoma. He hadn't done enough as a head coach. And that's not me being critical of Jeff. That's just the reality of life. And you know, I think Brent Venables is probably coaching for his job this year. So the new AD coming in there is probably going to have to make a football hire, which probably means your coach is safe, right? But then all of a sudden you bring in a new AD, and the new ADs don't like to make coaching changes as soon as they show up. You know, the Harsin situation at Auburn was different. He was already out the door. They just let Cohen make the announcement, you know, to instill some confidence in your new leadership. But if you're Jeff Lebby, you know, what if you go 5-7 this year? Back-to-back losing years. Yeah, you made some progress, but all of a sudden you've got a new AD. You're probably going into 2026 on the hot seat with an AD that didn't hire you. And then all of a sudden we got to go out and spend a bunch more money on a coaching search and buyouts and things of that nature. So there's just a lot to this. It reminds me of something my dad told me a long time ago. My dad worked for the United States Department of Agriculture with Farmers Home and Agricultural and Rural Development for 33 years. And when I was in multi-store management, he told me this one day, I never forgot it. He goes, when you get those days, and they're few and far between, when you get those days, there aren't a lot of people that need you. You need to appreciate them because they don't come around very often. There's always a fire burning somewhere when you've got multi-store management or multi-office management. There's always something. You got a hire to make or a fire to make or some training to do, relocate a branch. There's always something, right? And so when you think about managing the operation that is Mississippi State, we're in a situation right now where maybe we don't have a lot of fires burning, as we discussed on Friday. You know, there's always one or two things. Maybe we can do a little bit better. You know, But the reality of it is we should be on pretty solid, maybe the wrong word, but at least steady ground. And then all of a sudden this bubbles up, and so that could change things again. And then we probably go through another little, you know, run of 2 years where we got to go get our own people. You know, we've had some of our people recently. We had Mississippi State Associate AD that recently interviewed for the Arkansas State AD job. They didn't get it, but those are the kinds of people that we have, people that are ambitious, people that are going to be attractive to other schools. And so you don't mind replacing somebody that got a promotion. That's an easy sell to make. It's like, hey, you come in here and do the job that this person did, who just got an athletic department of their own. So this becomes like a stepping stone type opportunity for you. Come in here and kill it. This is a path to promotion. You know, when you have to fire somebody or demote somebody, it's a little more difficult, right? But I share all that because I think it's important to understand. We have to address the issue because we've known since the day that Zach Selman got here at some point that Joe Castiglione would retire and that he would be an obvious candidate. Well, that day is here. That day is here. I was thinking Joe may give it a couple more years. That's what I was thinking. But here we are. And so, again, nothing has happened. But to ignore the topic would be irresponsible. And so we'll see what happens as we kind of move forward. But again, them talking about him transitioning during the upcoming school year, you know, makes me think this thing may not take too terribly long. Certainly by the end of the year, at the end of the semester for sure, if not before. It sounds like to me, I mean, Joe didn't just wake up today and decide it's time to retire. You know what I'm saying? And maybe they already have somebody in mind. Maybe they already have somebody, in some respects, agreed to in principle. And so it's like, we got to get through the summer months, and then we'll begin to transition. And hopefully that has no impact on us. But again, it's worthy of our attention and our discussion. All right, time for our player of the day. And it's going to be a newcomer. It's Daniel Niemeyer. Of course, the player of the day brought to you by closewithblair.com. Blair is a mortgage professional, 24 years experience in the industry. You need to get his expertise and know-how working for you. You never know when life is going to throw you a curveball and you're going to need somebody to help you with some mortgage loan origination. Maybe you're getting some cash out. Maybe you're refinancing, consolidating some debt. Maybe you're buying a home. And how cool is that? To be able to buy a home, plant some roots somewhere, not throw your money away renting. Super cool, right? Maybe you need that game day condo. I know you want it. Maybe you need it. And so when you're ready to take those steps, reach out to Blair Chandler at 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. A Bulldog through and through, has a place here in town, multiple sport season ticket holder. He rides the wave of emotion just like all of us. I like to keep business in the family whenever we can. Encourage you to do the same. So whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, Blair Chandler, the only name to know, visit his website, closewithblair.com. Daniel Niemeyer, it's fun to say, doesn't look like Niemeyer, but had a chance to interview him today. Man, you talk about a young guy who is absolutely jacked to be a Bulldog. He is part of the 2026 class. Now, I have interviewed every commitment we have for 25 and 26. I've updated just about everybody in the 25 class with one exception. Ahead of the draft just to kind of get, hey, what are we thinking? You know, had a half dozen or so guys report yesterday to begin their Bulldog career. We'll have some more that'll be here at the end of the month, including our portal guys. But Niemeyer's interesting. This is a guy from Glen Allen, Virginia, who committed to UVA because Brian O'Connor and those guys were there. And he goes, you know, my allegiance was more to the coaches than the school. And he has such glowing things to say about Virginia. But he said, when I showed up at Mississippi State and I saw that beautiful campus and all the amenities and all the facilities available to Bulldog baseball, it was a no-brainer of a decision. And how cool is that Brian O'Connor can get a player a big-time prospect from the state of Virginia to pass on playing at UVA to come to Mississippi State. Obviously, it's going to be more of a commitment from his family, you know, to make the games and things of that nature. Probably been a lot easier for them to just, hey, we'll just head over to Charlottesville and watch the ball game. Now things are a little bit different. But it says a lot about the relationship that Brian O'Connor and this staff has with their players, that they would leave their home state to come to Mississippi State and be a part of our program. So we tip our caps to Daniel Kneeneighbor. And again, get familiar. Say when you see it, when you see how it's written, you're going to be confused. And he laughed when I said, listen, last question I got for you. How do you pronounce your last name? And he said, yeah, it looks a lot harder to say than it really is. He goes, it's knee and then neighbor. So Kneeneighbor. Daniel Kneeneighbor, pitcher out of Glen Allen, Virginia, headed to Bulldog territory this time next year. Yeah, super cool stuff. Yeah, super, super cool stuff. Really enjoyed talking to him. Made all those articles free, too. So even if you're not a member of jeanspage.com, and you certainly should be, all of the signees that we updated, last year I made all that stuff VIP, not this year. I just felt it was too important. I think it was important for you guys to understand, everybody, to understand what these incoming players think about your new coaches. Unique circumstance, right? We make every commitment story free regardless of sport. But when we update guys throughout the process, sometimes we put that behind a paywall. But I just felt me, as the boss, I just felt like, you know what? This information needs to be disseminated on a free basis to give every Bulldog a chance to fully appreciate the impact that Brian O'Connor and his staff are making and have made on the players that are coming to school this year. So you can go read that. Again, at your leisure, it's all on my socials. If you missed it, you can just go scroll through the feed and find those for free. How about that? And we always tag stuff. It's VIP. We do. But, you know, I run the show. I don't have to go check with anybody. And I just felt like it was important for you guys to have that information readily available. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by Kalido Guitars. That's CalidoGuitars.com. I've had some people hit me up again last week. Steve, what's the name of the guitar shop? It's Kalido Guitars. CalidoGuitars.com. Whether you're looking for a brand new acoustic, an electric, perhaps a classical guitar, 12-string, whatever you need guitar-related, you can find at Kalido Guitars. This is a Mississippi State owned and operated company based out of Lake Jackson, Texas. If you're in that neck of the woods, stop by and see the showroom. You'd be glad you did. You can peruse through all the selections and maybe bring something home with you. If you can't make it to town but would still like to support a Mississippi State owned business, and we always recommend that, again, keep business in the family, you can visit them online or you can call them. And when you do, you ask about those gig bags, you ask about that guitar case, the guitar stand, and if you don't have a guitar stand, you're doing guitar playing wrong. You don't need that thing leaning up against a wall. It's bad for the neck. I'm not a great player, but I enjoy playing when I get a chance. And I want my instrument to be in tip-top shape. You do too. But expand your horizons a bit and visit KalidoGuitars.com. They're going to give you some incentive. Okay, they got great service, great selection, great prices, but here's some added benefit by being a Boneyard listener. When you give them promo code BSR, and you know what that stands for, just remember BSR, try to keep it simple, they're going to give you a 10% discount on your purchase. Whether you buy an instrument, a case, accessories, whatever, 10% off your purchase price. They're going to give you free shipping. They're going to give you no sales tax unless you live in the state of Texas. And they're going to make a 5% donation to the Bulldog Excellence Fund of your purchase price. I wish more businesses did that. How cool is that? Bulldogs looking out for Bulldogs. And we got some Bulldogs that rock. And so we encourage you to use Kalido Guitars as your guitar shop. Guys, I had a great time yesterday and over the weekend kind of keeping up with all this, the Black Sabbath, Ozzy Osbourne thing. We're not going to do an Ozzy list today, but I got challenged by a listener, so we're going to get to that. But I loved it, man. I did. And I'm not going to lie, man, I got a little emotional when Ozzy sang "Mama, I'm Coming Home," and he had a tough time with the lyrics. You know, Ozzy's got Parkinson's, and you know, it's incredible that he's still alive. It really is. It really, really is. If I told you in 1985 that Ozzy would still be alive 40 years later, you'd never believed it. I wouldn't have believed it, but he is. And in some respects, it felt like we were saying goodbye to Ozzy yesterday. That's how it felt. And when he sang "Mama, I'm Coming Home," man, it was emotional. I cried. I'm not going to lie. And it's not just the fact that you begin to question your own mortality, but it's knowing that a phase in your life is over, a phase that you've really enjoyed. I've been an Ozzy Osbourne fan as long as I've known who Ozzy Osbourne was. I mean, going all the way back to, I guess my gateway album was Diary of a Madman. But then you go back and you listen to the majestic playing of Randy Rhoads. He didn't have a Koleto guitar, but I know he wished he did. But, yeah, when he sang "Mama, I'm Coming Home," Zach Wilde had to kind of help with the vocals a little bit because Ozzy was losing it a little bit. He was getting emotional. And the crowd, they showed the crowd. There was not a dry eye in the house. I think we all kind of felt it. Those in attendance and those of us watching online, I think we felt it, that this was probably our goodbye from Ozzy Osbourne. And he is a national treasure, even though he is not an American. But he has found his greatest level of success in the States. And he is synonymous with rock and roll. But I love the fact that he did the little jam band. And he had Nuno Bettencourt from Extreme. What a phenom he is, man. And then the great Jakey Lee. You guys know how I feel about Jake. Those are the peak Ozzy years. I don't care what anybody else tells you. And I'll die on this hill because I lived it. I lived it, thanks to MTV maybe, but also to the great playing of Jakey Lee. Not a lot of people could have pulled that off, to be the full-time guitar player for Ozzy after Randy's death. You know, there was a couple of interim guys in between, but then, you know, Jake came along, wrote "Bark at the Moon." He wrote the song, brought it with him, changed a few things, and of course, "Bark at the Moon," "Ultimate Sin." Again, that's peak Ozzy to me, but nevertheless, if you get a chance, go watch some of that stuff. David Draymond did Shot in the Dark, if I can get it out. And Lizzie Hale did "Ultimate Sin." I know you guys are big fans of hers from Hailstorm. How cool was it to have kind of a generational type thing, right? And then, you know, Bill Ward coming out there playing drums at the end. Of course, they closed the set with Paranoid. And Geezer Butler out there, still a phenomenal bass player. And Tommy Iommi, and you know, the feed cut off, and Geezer made a post on social media today. A lot of people thought that the guys in Black Sabbath just left Ozzy on stage. Well, Geezer went to go get his cake, you know, because it's still old school. But yeah, we love Ozzy, and I do think there's supposedly going to be a new album coming out next year. I suspect that's the last one, and I suspect we probably won't see any more public performances from him. And it really felt like it was a goodbye yesterday. It really did. I called the wife. I'm not going to lie. I got a little emotional talking to her. It's just one of those things. And I just love so much that Jakey Lee was a part of that. It was the right thing to do. And real quickly, before we get in our top 10 list, the Jakey Lee story is so sad. It's so incredibly sad. So Jake basically gets kicked out of the band due to alcoholism, and then he just went on a bender, gets it together, puts together a band called Badlands, who I love, and all of their stuff's out of print, so you can find it. You got to pay for it, but you'll be glad you have it. You can't stream it anywhere, because I'm about to tell you why. Ray Gillen, who was the singer, died of HIV. Now, the rumors, and there's some people that have speculated against this and say it's incorrect. Some people say he knowingly transmitted the disease, and lawsuits were filed. And so as part of that lawsuit, they can't get licensing in the States for that music, which to me didn't make a lot of sense. Like, if you had the lawsuit, I mean, Ray's dead, right? I mean, so Ray can't benefit in any way from this music being played, streamed, or purchased. And so if you would like to recoup anything whatsoever, let the music be licensed. But you know what? Maybe just the thought of that money showing up is re-triggering trauma. I get it. But after Badlands went kaput, Jake went back into alcoholism, released a couple solo albums that never really picked up. Then he put together a Red Dragon Cartel, and things are kind of going okay for a while. Did some work within this moment. And then last year, Jay got shot. He's out walking his dog in Vegas, and somebody shoots him. Just a complete random act of violence. I'm happy to say they found the perpetrators, and they've now been held accountable. Back to our first segment of the show. So I was glad to see Jake looking great, looking healthy, and getting up there playing Ultimate Sin and Shout in the Dark. It's great. 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 Dave Draymond sang Shout in the Dark. You can check it out. It's all out there online now. So real quickly, our top 10 list, I had a listener challenge me that said, hey, Steve, you did the ace list. Do you think you could do the other face cards in the deck? So here we go. That's our week this week. And you never know, maybe we can find the rook too. Certainly the Joker, right? All right, so number 10, real quickly, Clint Lowry from Seven Dust did a great solo album called God Bless the Renegades. We've talked about it on the show before. My favorite track on that album is Kings. Number 9, Blue Murder, John Sykes, formerly of Thin Lizzy and Whitesnake. Of course, the 87 album, as they call it, kind of the breakthrough album in the States for Whitesnake, going back to Slide It In. John Sykes was a guitar player. After he was dismissed from the band, he put together a great band with Tony Franklin and Carmen Appice called Blue Murder, and it's Valley of the Kings, which was the first single off the debut album. It is phenomenal. Number 8, Kiss. Thought we'd show a little love to Asylum. I don't know that that record gets enough respect. It's King of the Mountain from Kiss. And there's a lot of songs called King of the Mountain, including one from Bon Jovi that I don't really care for, so it didn't make our list. Number 7, Avenged Sevenfold. Love those guys. It's Hail to the King. Number 7. So then that gets us to Rainbow with Ronnie James Dio. If you don't know Rainbow, you probably do, but don't recognize just the name. You know the songs. It doesn't matter to me if you go with the Jolynn Turner years, but I like the Ronnie James Dio years better, like Man of Silver Mountain. Great stuff. Rainbow had a track called Kill the King. Yeah, so we're hailing the king in 1 minute, killing him the next. Number 5 from Aerosmith. Many of you guys know this song. It's a great song, too, and I think really it kind of encapsulates what the Aerosmith experience is about. There's just some great guitar. There's some chord changes that are very interesting. It's Kings and Queens from Aerosmith. Number 4, I think August and Everything After is one of the best albums of the early 90s, and I think many of you have slept on it. You loved it back then. Maybe you need to pull that bad boy out and give it another spin. But it's Counting Crows, Rain King, because I am the Rain King. Love that track. Number 3, and I thought it was important that we included this band because, number 1, it has a Mississippi connection, and it also fits our topic or our motive, our motif of the day. Probably more like it, right? And many of you guys know Ty Tabor. And if you don't, you should. Ty was born in Pearl, Mississippi, along with the great Tommy Aldridge. But Ty moved to Springfield, Missouri, and next thing you know, he became a part of one of the best three-piece bands of our generation, King's X. And we're going to go with the song King, because King is coming. Great, great, great lyrics in that one. Absolutely love it. Number 2, no list of Kings would be complete without The Police's King of Pain. Got to give it up to Sting every now and again. But number 1... many of you know this because you're fans of WWE. And anytime that we can celebrate Limit Killmeister, we should. It's Motorhead's King of Kings, so bow down to the King. Absolutely love that song. And again, thanks for the suggestion. This person asked not to be identified, but we're going to run through this. So we'll come back and we'll do Queens and we'll do Jacks. And you never know. You never know. Maybe we can do some stuff with the Joker. We know a couple songs right off the top of our head. You never know. So we'll see how things go. So yes, I accept a challenge. There you go. Our first installment, The Kings. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy Samanti, my friend, on X at Dogmatic67. That's DogMatic67. You can find our great list on Spotify under that same handle if you're a Spotify person. I don't know. I'm not, but maybe you are. And I'm on all forms of social media at ScoutSteveR. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart, and you should. You absolutely should, because Campus Bookmart has what you want. And that's more Mississippi State merch. I love Campus Bookmart. I love going in there. I wish I could win a lottery. I'd buy us all a gift. You'd have to send me your address, but I'd make sure you got it. That's a cool thing, too. You can shop online yourself. Promo code BSR gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones incomplete. Football season's coming up. It's time for you to update the wardrobe a little bit. You're going to be taking that last summer vacation. You're excited about football season. Maybe you are. Maybe you're not. But either way, you're a Bulldog. You need to rep the brand whenever you can. Get some new gear. Don't go trotting out all those old T-shirts or old, you know, quarter zips and things like that. Find some cool stuff. And, Mom, find something for yourself. You don't treat yourself enough. I know maybe your husband tells you otherwise, but I'm giving you permission to buy yourself something, too. And that's all that matters. You can tell him to take it up with me. Buy yourself something, too. Whether you're looking for new apparel or gift ideas or everything you need to detail out your fan cave, you can find it at campusbookmart.net. But go by and see their smiling faces next time you're in town. I think you'll be glad you did. Wonderful service there. And, I love going in there and checking things out and getting excited about what is to come. There's something about having that new Mississippi State merch that, I don't know, it just kind of changes my feeling about things. Because by the time we kick off, it doesn't matter who we play, I will have convinced myself that we're going to win. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's how I feel, and that's how I look at things. I always think, you know what? Maybe we got a shot here. You know, we'll see how things play out. But nevertheless, time for us to get into our next opponent preview. As you guys are probably aware, we get the open date October the 11th, one of the open dates. We're not going to have some little, you know, pithy, silly thing about winning the open date. But then we'll get ready to make a trip to the Swamp. Have you guys been to the Swamp? I mean, honestly, have you been? I think you should. And maybe this is the year to go. Be a nice year to kind of check that off your bucket list. And I don't know how, you know, the Florida situation is going to play out. Do you? I don't think so, you know. Our last trip to Gainesville, we won. Way back in 2010. We've only played twice since then. Played them in 2018. We lose to Dan Mullen 13-6. Many of you are still not over that. And then last year they came to Starkville. It was a very competitive game for a while, and then they got the better of us late and won 45-28. But, we've had some success in Gainesville, Florida. Maybe not as much as we'd like. But let's go back and look at the year that was for the Florida Gators. And Billy Napier on the hot seat, and again, you know, they finished the year 8-5, but there was a time last year when things didn't look so promising. They get blasted by Miami in game one in the Swamp, 41-17. And of course, you got a couple of rivals in Florida State and Miami. You can't afford to lose either one of those games. Well, they did. Miami made them look really, really unprepared in that game. They bounce back and beat Samford 45-7, then lose at home again to Texas A&M. You know, we talked about A&M on Wednesday's show last week. It was a big win for A&M. Well, they show up at Starkville, and we suggested that we had a chance to be 3-0 and that they would be 1-2. Well, they held up their end of the deal. We didn't hold up ours. As you guys know, we lost to Toledo and at Arizona State. The Toledo game was certainly a letdown for many people. They came in here and they went 45-28. And again, it was a competitive game until late. That kind of turned them around a little bit. They get the win over Central Florida. Now all of a sudden you look up there 3-2, headed to Knoxville against a very good Tennessee team, and they lose in overtime to the Volunteers 23-17. If they win that game, it's probably a different dynamic in Gainesville. Well, they beat Kentucky 48-20 and beat them well. You know, it's one of those games you look at, Kentucky's a little bit quirky. It's difficult to prepare for them because of those odd fronts that they employ. It's a little different deal. But Florida's able to get it done. They play Georgia, another rivalry game. Florida's got a bunch. They consider Georgia a rival too. Georgia more so than Florida. But 34-20 there in Jacksonville. And then they go to Texas. And Texas. gets them 49-17. And at this point, everybody's like, man, it's time for us to make a coaching change. This thing is over. Let's just be done with it. It's over. Very expensive to make those moves this time of year, especially with the contract they put together. But Florida was 4-5 at the time with three regular season games left to play. And then they upset LSU 27-16. They upset Ole Miss 24-17. Very competitive games in Florida. Remember how wild that Ole Miss game was? Like Jackson Dart threw back-to-back picks. And then they had to pick. They got overturned. And then they get back on the field. Or they still have life. Those are the pick. Crazy. And then they beat Florida State. So now you close the regular season on a three-game winning streak. And then you take on Tulane. You win that game 33-8. And it really wasn't competitive. Yes, I know it's just a Gasparilla Bowl. But you end up winning 4 to close it out to finish 8-5. So now you feel like you got a little juice. Let's look at this year's schedule, too. They're going to open up against Long Island University, LIU. Everybody talks about how bad the non-conference schedule can be at times. This is one of the examples. That should be a bloodbath. Then they'll get South Florida. Another home game. Then they travel to LSU. And then they travel to Miami. And then they'll host Texas. And then they travel to College Station. You talk about a very difficult stretch in the schedule. This is it. Now, they get the open date after Miami before they host Texas. But that four-game stretch is going to define the quality of this season. For sure. We get them, and I love where we fall on their schedule. We get them. Granted, there's an open date after us, but we get them after that juggernaut, after the road trip to LSU, to Miami, Texas, Texas A&M. You know, what kind of shape are they going to be in by the time we play? That's a very physical segment of their schedule. They get the open date, and then they get us. No, they don't. They get us without the open date. The open date's after us. So October the 18th, and then after that open date is the rivalry game with Georgia. Then there's the road trip to Kentucky, which is always so weird. Then they got to go to Ole Miss. Tennessee comes in, and then Florida State. Guys, this is a tough schedule. I mean, outside of this LIU game, you know, South Florida, you know. But, man, once you get into week three, there's not a lot of games you look at and say, this is a sure win. You know, I'm sure they're thinking we are. But you get hot late, and you never know how football is going to work. But the construction of this schedule is really not conducive for success. It's really not. Now, granted, they didn't have a lot to say about it. They picked their non-conference, and then the SEC kind of, you know, filters in what works. But, man, this is a brutal stretch. It really is. And so, again, you work through this thing here. You open up August 30th, and then you get that open date after Miami, and then you get Texas, Texas A&M back-to-back, and then Mississippi State. Now, granted, they got to play that game at home, but I like where we fall on the schedule. I don't know how well we match up athletically with them, but who knows what shape each team is going to be in by the time we get there. That's important to understand. And after playing a very physical LSU game, the rivalry game, and then a very physical Texas team, and A&M going to College Station, playing there, it's a tough stretch, man. I mean, again, 3 out of 4 on the road before we go to the Swamp, and the one exception is the Texas game. So I suspect that there will be a lot of people that wear orange and blue that are calling for a coaching change before we get there. And that could also impact the quality of the crowd. That could negate some of the home field advantage. It's an afternoon game too. Granted, it's in October, so it should be, you know, cool enough, but warm enough. So I'm not going to call a dub here, but I'm going to tell you, I think this game has the capacity to be a very competitive game just based on where I think we'll both be at that time. And again, State needs to win those four non-conference games to really have a viable chance to reach a bowl game. But as far as SEC road games go, this one's probably more manageable than most. And again, not calling for a dub here, but I won't be the least bit surprised if we go down there and play well against these guys. Now, granted, you know, that secondary is going to be legit. And let's take a quick look at kind of, you know, what to expect. You know, a lot of people believe that maybe they've turned the corner. But, man, when I look at that schedule, it's just absolutely brutal. Absolutely brutal. And you forget, too, I mean, this whole Florida thing, man. I mean, like, it has not been the best of times, you know. I think we would all agree with that. Certainly Florida would agree with that. You know, when Scott hired Billy Napier, a lot of people thought, you know what, this will work. And I'll be honest with you, I was one of those people that really felt like, you know what, they had a chance, because I felt like in the natural recruiting footprint, they were going to be able to recruit to that offense. It's a run-first offense. It's in many respects kind of reminiscent of what Dan Mullen runs. You know, you run a lot, and you set up play action passing, you do a lot of quarterback run. It's a little different dynamic. But guys, before last year, Florida had three consecutive losing seasons. And to kind of frame that up for you just a little bit, they have not had double-digit wins since 2019. That's not the Florida that we know. Not the Florida we've come to expect in the modern era. And there was a time when Florida was a team that a lot of people scheduled for homecoming. That's generations ago. But when you look at what Spurrier built in Florida and what Dan Mullen and Urban Meyer kind of created there too, I mean, goodness, three 13-win seasons for Urban Meyer at Florida. But an interesting dynamic for sure. And the thing that I'll point out, too, that at Florida, Urban never really did it without Dan. You know, Dan leaves, and then we talked about that 2010 game. We went down there and beat them, you know, because they had a kicker get hurt in the ball game, had to have a punter attempt a game-tying field goal. But, yeah, Florida fans are ready to be Florida again after a pretty anemic stretch. And 8-5 probably felt like 13 wins in some respects after what they've been through. DJ Lagway is probably one of the biggest stars in the league that people aren't really talking about yet. And they will. You know, there was some times that he was up and down last year for sure. You know, a lot of people thought Graham Mertz was going to be, you know, the big guy. But Mertz put some things together before, and then Lagway comes in and a little more different quarterback, right? But we'll see what Jaden Baugh can do. You know, Jaden Baugh is a guy, obviously, is a running back that likes to run on the interior, kind of fits what Billy wants to do. Wide receiver-wise, they're always going to have guys that can run, jump, and catch. It's just kind of, you know, the nature of things. But that offensive line's got to be better for them to be what they want to be. I think most people would agree with that. And again, a lot of those guys too, you know, in the beginning were recruited by, you know, John Hevesy, you know. And we'll see. You know, we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, defensively, you know, Florida had some moments last year. And again, I'm always worried about the Florida secondary because they always tend to have playmakers with length that can really run out there. You know, so we'll see how that goes. But they hit some guys up in the portal, especially along the front. Linebackers always tend to be a strength in the Florida lineup. But this is a defense that is kind of predicated on turnovers, especially in the secondary. And kind of looking back at you know, statistics for last year, I mean, just to kind of frame up, you know, some of the names that we're talking about here. And again, I think Lagway is probably going to carry this team as far as they can go. And again, you think about how much quarterback run do you want to do with him because of the fact that you've got that incredibly difficult schedule, and right in the heart of that schedule, you're going to have to deal with some teams that are going to be as athletic or more athletic than you. And so DJ Lagway is a guy that at times can put himself in harm's way. So how do you coach that, right? How do you coach that and still run the same tenets of your offense? You know, Dan Mullen, Billy Napier, coaches of that magnitude, they expect teams to have to account for the quarterback in as part of the run game. And as a result, there's going to be some wear and tear on your quarterback. And I think that's an important aspect to remember of all this thing, too, is Lagway can be a dude, but do they coach to protect him, knowing how much is riding on his shoulders, or they just kind of turn him loose? And the more they turn him loose, the better I think Mississippi State's chances are, because of the fact I think there will be a lot of wear and tear on the quarterback. I don't think there's any question about that. I think everybody probably would see that the same way. The running quarterback in the SEC is always a mixed bag, right? It's just kind of how things go. You know, we saw it with Dak. I mean, how many times did we have Dak, you know, run the football, and then other times you look at it and say, you know what, we got to kind of slow this thing down, you know. It's all part of it. That's an important aspect to remember, too. You know, the more he runs, it's one of those scenarios, too, where you begin to think, hey, if he runs, how does it impact the passing game when he gets a little bit nicked up? We know that from experience. But, yeah, I mean, just kind of looking back, you know, this team, they averaged 28 points a game and then gave up 23. That's a team you'd expect to be around 500, especially when you consider the non-conference schedule. But give up 300 points last year. You know, maybe that defense wasn't quite as salty. You know, but you look at some of those games down the stretch, they were able to kind of play complementary football, and that made a difference. But it's interesting, they gave up more first downs than they achieved last year. And you say, well, some of that's big plays, and some of it is, but 32 more first downs for their opponents. Yeah, and you look at rushing, they basically, the same thing. Like, Florida outrushed their opponents by just a small amount. So it's about, you know, you take six one way, half a dozen the other. And it's interesting. Passing numbers, 2,934 for Florida. Their opponents, 2,957. So you look at that and say, man, how did this team manage to have a winning record when there was just so much that was even with their opponents? I mean, the production wasn't there, but it matters most on the scoreboard, right? And it's so interesting, too. Look at interceptions. Florida threw 14 picks, and they picked off 14 passes. That's pretty remarkable, too. But look at the Lagway stuff here. It's individual numbers. We talked about Jordan Ball a bit earlier. Led the team last year with rushing with 673 yards. Montrell Johnson's a name that we talked about a lot last year. Played in 10 games, right at 600 yards, missed three games. Likely would have been the leading rusher had he remained healthy. But Jacoby Jackson also did some things, too. So DJ Lagway ran it last year 51 times. And that works out to, you know, about 4 to 5 times a game. That's probably enough to keep defenses honest. But when you maybe lose one of the key components in your running game, do you run him a little bit more? It'll be interesting to watch. Look at the passing numbers last year. You know, Graham Mertz played in 5 games. Better quarterback rating. Threw for 791 yards, but of course he gets banged up. Lagway has to take over. Played in 12 games, completed right at 60% of his passes, and threw for 1,915 yards, 12 touchdowns against 9 picks. So ball security's got to be a big thing here. We'll see how things go, but it's so interesting, too, how they spread the football around so much. 18 touchdown passes last year. The leading pass catcher, at least from a touchdown standpoint and yardage standpoint, was Elijah Badger with 4. And then from there, it just kind of spread around. And really, that's kind of the tenet of a good offense, right? Is, you know, the more playmakers you have that can extend plays and put the ball in the end zone, the more difficult you are to defend. Now, defensively, again, we talked about this team had some moments, but maybe not as consistent as they should have been. Traquizi Bridges was a senior last year. He's gone. Had 70 tackles. Shamar James, a name that people know, inside backer out of Mobile, Alabama, had 64. You know, they're going to have some pieces back. You know, Jack Pyburn's a guy that did some things out of the bowl school of Jacksonville. Had 60 tackles last year. Also had four TFLs. Tyreek Sapp, that's a name you know too, right? Out of St. Thomas Aquinas. 13 TFLs last year. Seven of them were sacks. You know, so, you know, we'll see how this team looks. But if I had to call it today, I think it's probably another 6-6 type year. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I think you guys probably see it the same way. Yeah, they should beat LIU in South Florida. Yes. Yes. So it gives you two. But where do you honestly say right now that you can pull four? Based on the recent tradition and the up and down nature of the Billy Napier experience. You got them winning at LSU? No. You got them winning at Miami? Maybe. You got them beating Texas? I don't think so. You got them winning at College Station? Maybe. You got them beating us? Probably. Then you got Georgia at Kentucky. I mean, this again, the composition of the schedule just does not suggest that you should have any confidence in this Florida team this year. I think that's fair. Now, other people may disagree, and that's fine too. But I think this is one of those things when you begin to kind of, you know, look at this, it's going to have to be a week-to-week type deal. But, you know, they can't go out there and have Lagway go out there and throw a dozen picks again. You can't go out there and be loose and fast with the football. And you can't go out there and kind of, you know, get cute about that. You can't go out there and just run him and run him and run him knowing you don't have a lot of experience depth behind him. We talked about Jack Pyburn earlier. Yeah, he's at LSU now. Yeah. But, yeah, so much of that LSU game was so big. So big because a lot of people were kind of, you know, leaving Napier and the Gators for dead. And, you know, that's just going to be one of those interesting things that we kind of see, you know. Again, if I told you beginning of the year last year they were going to win seven regular season games, and I'm sure that I told you they weren't, you probably wouldn't have believed it. You know, I really thought Ole Miss going to Gainesville, that Ole Miss would win that game. Thought that in the preseason. You know, going to Florida is never easy. It's not. But as we got ready for that, you know, of course, them beating LSU probably should have given Ole Miss a little bit you know, more confidence that they can prepare to go play a game like that, that Florida wouldn't sneak up on them. But, you know, that's just an interesting thing to me. You know, the dynamics of when you get a win like that, you know, what happens. But, again, I think six, maybe seven. And then that's the thing you got to figure out. What is Scott Strickland willing to accept from his football program? And again, that buyout is problematic to say the least. But I think you're probably looking at six wins. I think it's a 6-6 year. And you got to find a way to beat Miami and or Florida. Florida State, pardon me. Because if you don't, you know, the Bull Gators will be chomping, to say the least. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle when you're bringing a large group to town and it's just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. You can do your tailgating right there. Instead of having to lug all that stuff to camp, just show up a couple hours before game time, take in the ambiance, watch the game, go home. A lot less work, for sure. I know many of you enjoy doing it, but for those of you that are thinking, you know what, I just want to go to the game. I want to spend time with people I love. There's no better place to do that than the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Many of you are already coming to town and getting five hotel rooms. You can have your own accommodations, but have some common areas where you can all get together and break bread together. There's a full-service kitchen, the wet bar, that great back porch area, the fire pit area. I'm telling you, we've stayed there. We had a great time. We'll do it again. We love it, and you will too. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page will pop up for you. You can peruse all the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guest. Super cool. And then some booking options are going to be there too. Now, you can book through Airbnb or VRBO. That's completely up to you. I'm not judging. However, if you want to save a few bucks, book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson 10, BSR10, the number 10, and get 10% off your stay. They've had some great success since being one of our partners. We're very happy to partner with them to make this great place to stay a lot more visible within the Mississippi State fan base. Be sure and check it out today, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Okay, a lot of questions about the Major League Baseball draft, which starts on Sunday. We'll probably do a final full preview on Friday. That's the plan anyway. But after speaking to our signees that we expect to be within the draft conversation, I got some thoughts. I do. Very grateful that these young men take time to speak to us and really to you to kind of let you know what they're thinking. And listen, there's still so much to learn. They don't know when, who, or where they're going to be drafted. They don't know what they're going to be offered. Many of them have a signing bonus in mind. And for many of them, it is kind of uncompromising. It's like, okay, this is what I have to have. We've had some guys in the past that have had a high asking price, and some teams have met that number. You think about Blaze Jordan. You think about Dakota Jordan last year. Even though he didn't get drafted as high as we thought, the Giants didn't have a pick before then, and he got money well over slot. And that's something to understand, too. There is a assigned slot value for each pick, and as a result, everybody has to work within their own bonus pool, and the Mariners have the highest, the Yankees have the lowest. Many years, you don't want the Yankees to draft your guy because chances are they're going to get a very lucrative offer. But there's a lot more structure to it than there used to be when they work through, overhauling the draft. In 2020, it was just a five-round scenario, which enabled Rowdy Jordan and T.A. to return to school and ultimately win a national championship. If we have a full 20-round draft that year, I don't know that we get them back. Just kind of laying it out there for what I believe. But it is what it is. We did have them, and we won a national championship with them, right? But I wrote an article today about the 20 players that were drafted and signed rather than come to school. And it's a mixed bag, to say the least. Also made that a free piece. Only two of those 20 have made the major leagues. Of course, that's Austin Riley from the Braves and James Wood for the Nationals. And James Wood did not have a great senior year. And there was some concern. It's like, he projects really well. Production wasn't there, but they felt like, you know what, we get him in the minors, we can figure it out. He got big money from the Nationals. Now he's an everyday player for them. But JoJo Parker, I think, is the guy you got to worry the most about. Projected as the number 9 player in the draft pool, according to MLB.com. Plays a premium position, a shortstop, and he's a double-digit home run guy. I think it's pretty safe to say that he is going to get drafted high enough to sign. Now, speaking to him, he goes, it's all going to boil down to draft day. He has a number in mind. I didn't ask him for the number. I think that's very private and personal information. And not to mention those numbers at times can change. You know, those guys may say, hey, I want $2 million. And all of a sudden somebody says, okay, we'll give you 1.6. And they say, oh, okay, that's close enough. Right? There is that aspect of it too. That's just a negotiating ploy. Right? And there are some guys that are just kind of ready to begin their professional careers. And the one thing I can tell you about both of the Parker brothers, they're not going to have to sign for survival. There's a lot of young people out there whose parents spend a fortune, and I'm sure the Parker family has too, double what most do because they have twin boys. But Jop, the dad's practicing attorney and a judge down there, you know, so it's not like these young people have to sign just to get off mom and dad's payroll. That's not how it is with Jop and Michelle, you know. They would be equally happy if they came to Mississippi State. But if you're JoJo Parker and you're projected to be a pick in the top half of the first round, how much more can you improve your standing? Now, it's a little different for Jacob. You know, Jacob is not even in the top 100 when it comes to prospects within this draft pool. And so he may have a decision to make. We'll see how things go. But either way, chances of them, probably the only guarantee that they're going to be on the same team next year is they both come to Mississippi State. We certainly don't expect that for JoJo. And we'll see what happens with Jacob. Spoke to Landon Harmon today. That's the pitcher out of East Union Attendance Center. I do expect him to sign. And some of the things that he said kind of leads me to that. But I'm talking to people, scouts in pro baseball, we do expect that he will probably be a guy that will likely go in the first two rounds. Now, as you guys are well aware, those of you that have been astute followers of the draft the last few years, by the time the pick is made in the first 10 rounds, the deal is pretty much done. There are some exceptions. You know, like last year, Ryan Prager didn't accept the deal from the Angels, and it cost us David Mershon because they used their surplus to sign Dave, because they were able to get close to his number. And then Dave and his family flew out to Anaheim, deal was done, or Los Angeles, and deal was done. And so there's a lot to that. There's a little more, you know, ebb and flow with picks 11 through 20 in those rounds. But when you see somebody taken in the first 10, you got to know that at least they're within the ballpark of it comes to the asking price. So understand that. So if you see a guy drafted in the first 10 rounds, it is pretty reasonable to assume they're not coming to school. There have been very few exceptions. We had more last year than we've had in recent years, and I think NIL is a part of that. I do, because there were schools that are like, hey, well, we'll give you, you know, $250,000 to come to school, and then maybe you can improve your draft stock. And that certainly matters a lot more in the back half of the draft. When you think about some of your current players, right, that's a part of it too. It's like, okay, the minimum signing bonus is $150, right? That's the deal, you know, unless you're willing to take less. But, you know, that's $150 is part of the collective bargaining agreement. So what if we can give you $150 and you give it another shot, see if you can improve your draft stock, because that $150 is going to be there next year too. That's an important aspect to understand too. That's where NIL kind of changes the game a little bit in the back half of the draft. There have been times in years ago when we used to have a 40-round draft and a 50-round draft that there would be guys that would sign for $1,500. They get next to nothing. Not even enough money to go buy a car, you know. But when you've got life-changing money, multi-million dollar deals that you got to consider, you know, the thought of coming to school is not maybe is advantageous. Now, Jack Bauer, spoke to him over the weekend. Fantastic young man, and all these guys have been. But it was my first time speaking with Jack. He was great. And I understand that his number is astronomical. We're talking mid-first-round type money. And he is a guy that's projected to be, you know, the 44th player in the draft thereabout. So they've got him currently projected as a second-rounder. I don't know if that's going to be enough money to get him to go. And we'll see. We'll see. If he gets first-round money, he's going to sign. So there is a possibility we could lose all of the, quote, big four. There's a chance that we split them. I think there is next to no chance that we get them all. I don't even think there's much chance to get three of the four. But we're going to have a great team either way. And I think when you look at the Jacob Parker situation, you've got a guy there that could play next year in your outfield as a true freshman. He's also a younger guy, so he'd have, you know, 3 years, you know, that he'd have to play and have an opportunity to be draft eligible again. And you begin to ask yourself, you know, how much of that factors into this thing? And then you think about your brother. If he's sure to sign and you like to go to school, you know, what does that mean long term? Do you get a chance to make up that money? Is that even a factor in the equation? Yeah, but I think one of the things that I learned today by researching the guys that have gone pro is how long it has taken them. And the bulk of them have never risen above double A. We got a couple guys right now, Blaze Jordan. This is a triple A guy. I got one more too. But it's taken a while to get there. One of them has taken him 7 years to get to triple A. And so when you think about the message that Brian O'Connor is selling, is like, hey, you come to college and you can figure out how you want to spend your life. Between 18 and 21, you can stay in crappy apartments, living off your signing bonus, and riding buses to go play games that nobody's going to come to. Or you can come to college, because the SEC essentially has been equated to like a double-A type level. So you get a chance to prove yourself against better competition and maybe not only improve your draft stock, but probably improve your schedule of getting through the minors. That's an important aspect of this. It's like, hey, if I can come to Mississippi State or an LSU in Arkansas and I can play 3 years in front of big crowds and big moments, I am probably more mentally prepared for the show. There's some other people out there that make it. But by and large, they don't. And there are some people out there too. We talked about, you know, spending a fortune, you know, to go to all these perfect game showcases and travel around and play travel team baseball. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that spend everything they have to support their children. And I think it's a wonderful thing. But there are also some of those young people that feel a sense of obligation to sign a contract. It's like, hey, I need to pay mom and dad back a little bit for all they've invested in me. And when you get millions of dollars to do that, it's a lot easier to do. Now, every parent would say, no, don't worry about it. But the reality of it is, there's a lot of those young people, that's one of the reasons they sign. There are some others that just don't want to go to school anymore. And that's something that we've talked about extensively on the jeanspage.com message boards. You know, a lot of people say, you know what, going to college is not always the best for everybody. There's some truth in that. However, at some point, we all get cut. Maybe injury-related, maybe production-related, but at some point, we no longer get to play in sporting events that matter beyond anybody but us. They're not putting church league softball scores in the paper very often, right? And I know many a young person back in the old draft format that signed for next to nothing and then were flushed out of baseball, you know, in a couple of years and then didn't have the money to go to school. And so that's an aspect of it too. Now, some of these guys obviously are, you would kind of label can't miss prospects. But there are many others that need to prove themselves a little bit more. And so that's something to consider. Like Peter Marchand is a guy. You look at Peter, David's brother. You know, David was a guy that got calls coming out of high school. People forget that. You know, Jet Williams was the only guy in that class that signed. But you know, Dave Marchand came to college, made a name for himself. He's already risen through the ranks. He benefited from coming to school. Dakota Jordan's a guy that had a lot of calls. Ends up getting a big chunk of change from the Giants. You know, there's a lot to that. And so that's the decision that a lot of young people have to make. And there are a lot of people that think, hey, if I sign today, then I'll have a head start. And Lennon Harmon even mentioned that. There's a lot of people that's the belief. It's like, hey, I would rather spend the next 3 years kind of fine-tuning my game and focusing 100% on baseball. I don't have to go to class. I don't have to write papers. I can just focus 100% on my craft. And there are some people, that's what they need to do. You look at Eric Sarantola. You know, he's the guy that kind of figured it out in the minors. And so that's an aspect of this too. Everybody's situation is a little bit different. And as Brian O'Connor told me last time we sat down last week, is everybody makes their own decision for their own reason. And everybody's reason could be a little bit different. But either way, we're very grateful for all these young men that have shared the path with us. And for those that will continue to do so, we're incredibly grateful. But there's no hard feelings for those that don't. You got to think, so many of these guys that are signed to us right now, committed to us, like in the 8th, 9th, and 10th grade. And the rules have changed a lot since then. You know, when we offered Jacob and Justin Parker, we had no clue that they were going to be first and second type draft picks coming out of high school. We thought they'd come to college and have the opportunity to have that type of potential. And so nobody, you know, could kind of foresee that. Obviously, we saw some incredible talent, and we jumped on it and got them both committed and felt great about it. But now here we are with JoJo Parker, the number 5 shortstop on the board. So interesting dynamics. And it's interesting, too, that these guys went to the combine and just kind of went through the interview process and met with front office guys and things of that nature. So it's so incredible to think about, you know, the level of talent that Mississippi State is able to recruit. But by and large, we want to keep the bulk of that coming to campus. And there's so many people, too, that'll go through and say, yeah, you know, Steve, well, we sign all these guys and they all end up going pro. And as I mentioned to you guys earlier, we've had 20 in the last 10 years. Yeah, 20. So it works out to about two a year, you know. And what's interesting about that aspect of it, too, is that, you know, a couple of those guys, you know, it was one year we had three. And, of course, Jet Williams is the only one in his class. And so I share that because, of course, the negative now always will say this happens every year. Well, it does because that's the level at which we recruit. It's the same thing for LSU, Arkansas, and everybody else. And so, again, we'll kind of revisit the topic on Friday. Hope you guys have a great start to your week. We'll speak again on Wednesday. If you hadn't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com. You can get signed copies of all my sports titles and my personal memoir, When the Bottom Falls. It's always a great gift idea, something cool like that. It's summertime. You need to read up on your sports. Maybe get copies of Flim Flam or Stark Villains or Alpha Dogs or Dog Pile. Every Bulldog needs a copy of Dog Pile. And, of course, the dude still hanging in there in the top five on the Mississippi Best Sellers list. And thank you guys so much for that. Come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. Call 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my lovely wife, Dana. She can answer any questions you may have. We've helped a lot of people. Maybe it'll help you too. If nothing else, just to kind of get a break, kind of get a mental reset. Be a great situation for you. I'm going to float this week myself. And come join us over at jeanspage.com, the premier Mississippi State athletics source for information in the history of the world. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.